الحمد لله وكفى والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا المصطفى. أما بعد، فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. ثم جعلناك على شريعة من الأمر فاتبعها ولا تتبع أهواء الذين لا يعلمون. وقال تعالى: يا أيها الذين آمنوا لا تأكلوا أموالكم بينكم بالباطل إلا أن تكون تجارة عن تراض منكم. صدق الله العظيم. وقال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم: دع ما يريبك إلى ما لا يريبك، أو كما قال عليه الصلاة والسلام. Respected ulama ikram, huffaz ikram, elders and brothers, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. At the outset, I feel it is important that I mention that it is not befitting for a person like me to be standing in front when there are senior ulama here sitting amongst me, amongst them are my teachers. But because it is the hukam, it is the command of my seniors to be here, I consider it as a lesson learned from them, being presented to them in order to rectify any mistakes and make any corrections that may be necessary. The ayat that I recited, Allah Ta'ala addresses Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and says that ثُمَّ جَعَلْنَاكَ عَلَى شَرِيعَةٍ مِّنَ الْأَمْرِ. Then, O Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, we placed you on a plain way. فَاتَّبِعْهَا, so follow it. وَلَا تَتَّبِعْ أَهْوَاءَ الَّذِينَ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ, and do not follow the desires of those who do not know. On the surface of it, this ayat may seem to be a very simple ayat. But if we go into the details, it covers a very important aspect of a Muslim's life, and that is the following of the Sharia. The Mufassirun mention that in this ayat, Allah Ta'ala has likened not following the Sharia to following one's desires. Sharia literally means a plain path. And in the context of Islamic law, of Islamic understanding, the technical meaning means divine revelation. For man to exist in a comfortable state in this world, man is in need of knowledge. And this knowledge, Allah Ta'ala has made it such that there are different sources to attain this knowledge. The primary source for the attainment of knowledge in order to lead a successful and comfortable life are the five senses that Allah Ta'ala has granted us: the hearing, the sight, the smell, the touch. And these five senses operate within a scope that they can work in. For example, the eyes have the ability to see, the ears the ability to hear, the body is able to touch, to feel, to get a sense of touch. But these five senses, whilst they are vital to the existence of a human being, their uses are not unlimited. Take for example, if I wish to close my eyes and see with my nose, it may seem like a very silly thing, but the reality of the matter is that the scope of operation of the five senses are very limited. So Allah Ta'ala has created another source of knowledge for insan to rely upon where the five senses are not able to operate. For example, if I wish this microphone that is in front of me, I can see it, I can feel it. There are certain amounts of knowledge that I can glean with my five senses. But if I wish to know Who manufactured this microphone? My five senses alone at this point cannot help me. Yes, there the second source of knowledge comes into play, that is the reasoning. The point of reasoning, the role of reasoning comes into play when the role of the five senses is terminated. But in the same vein, in the same manner that the five senses were not unlimited, the reasoning of a human being too is not unlimited. In fact, the reasoning of a human being is prone to make mistakes. And most theories that we see around us today are based purely on reasoning. In fact, it is mentioned in Encyclopedia Britannica that under the article of the atomic bomb, it is mentioned there that the atomic bomb is that invention which saved the lives of millions of Americans. The reasoning behind this is that had it not been for the atomic bomb, had it not been for that bomb which killed millions of people when it was detonated in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, then the World War II would have continued. Therefore, the World War II would have continued and it would have resulted in the loss of many people's lives. So according to this reasoning, this invention was responsible for saving many people's lives. We can see that the reasoning is very limited, and once it is taken out of its scope, then it is prone to errors. In the past, in the history of Islam, there was a sect known as the Batini sect. And the leader of that sect was called Ubaidullah ibn Hassan al-Qayrawani. He came up with this absurd theory, and he had written a letter wherein he states that I can't understand why at the time of marriage a boy or a family looks for a girl who is outside the family. Why not that the brother get married to the sister? Because logically, it is more befitting. The sister understands the needs. The sister knows the likes and dislikes. He knows the sister. They know that they are compatible. So we understand that merely to use one's intellect to arrive at conclusions in all our problems is something that is not possible. In fact, the philosophers state that reason without divine guidance cannot solve all human problems. In particular, it cannot develop a legal system, a system which translates what are the rights for a person and against a person. One of the Western philosophers states that what interest should the legal system protect? He says this is the question of values in which legal philosophy plays its part. But however much we desire the help of philosophy, it is difficult to obtain. Basically, what he is saying is that there is a point after which our reasoning, our logic cannot help us. He then goes on to say, indeed, it is only in religion where we can find a basis, and the truths of religion must be accepted by faith. These, respected brothers, are the disbelievers that are telling us this. That is why, coming back to the subject, we come to the third source of knowledge, the third most important source of knowledge, where our reasoning fails, where reasoning, the scope of reasoning terminates. Allah Ta'ala has a third source of knowledge. This source of knowledge is not accepted by the secular, the so-called Western world. But anyone in their right sense of mind knows that this third source of knowledge exists, and this third source of knowledge is divine knowledge. This is the knowledge of wahi. We come back to the ayah that I recited in the beginning, wherein we stated that Allah Ta'ala has told Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam that follow the plain path that we have given you, follow the sharia that we have given you, and do not follow the base desires. In other words, the Quran is saying that there are only two ways, there are two methods. Either a person is following what the sharia says, or he is following what his base desires say. And this aspect, or this fact, has been accepted even by the non-Muslims. One so-called philosopher, he states that reason is and ought only to be the slaves of passions and can never pretend to any other office than to serve and obey them. This is exactly the same sentiments which the ayah that we had recited gives off. The purpose of coming to this, giving this introduction, is for us to understand what is the sharia. For us to implement the sharia, we have to understand that the role the sharia plays in our lives is a very important role. Thereafter, when we get a hukam from the sharia, when we get a law concerning our social life, concerning our dealings, concerning our marriages, concerning what is good and what is bad, what is lawful and what is unlawful, what is permitted in trade and what is not permitted in trade, we will be able to apply this principle that this is beyond the scope of our reasoning. This is in another dimension, and this cannot be comprehended by our own understanding. Ibn Khaldun, the famous Muslim philosopher, he gives a very good example. He says that, take the example of a scale. You get different types of scales to weigh different things. You have a scale which the jeweler uses to weigh the weight of gold. And on the other hand, you may have a scale that is used to weigh extremely heavy equipment. Take, for example, in our day and age, the weigh bridges that you get. If a person takes the jewelry and puts it on the weigh bridge, does he expect to get an accurate reading? In the same vein, in the same manner, if a person takes an extremely heavy article and places it on the jeweler's scale, that scale which the jeweler, at the time of weighing, he holds his breath in so as not to affect the accurateness of the reading, we cannot expect to get a correct answer. This is why we will find in the lives of the Sahaba that whenever hukam was given by Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, they understood this principle. They understood that these aspects are beyond our reasoning. And you will never find in the pages and pages of hadith that the Sahaba asked Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam why. This question never comes about in the ahadith. Yes, what we will find is how, O Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. This divine guidance that we had discussed, it comes in different forms. It comes with aspects related to different parts of our lives. Those aspects which cannot be understood, which cannot be agreed upon just by the human mind. Amongst the vast array of aspects covered by the wahi, that the divine revelation that comes from Allah, one very important aspect is that of our dealings and of our trade and business. Respected Maulana Yunus Patel Sahab, Damat Barakatuh, requested me to discuss in brief our business dealings and what Islam has taught us, what are the principles, what are those things which is vital that every person who deals in trade, every person who engages in buying and selling should know. And that is almost every single one of us sitting here. We are engaged in buying and trade. It is a necessity for the human existence. In the second ayah that I recited, Allah Ta'ala says that, Ya أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا, all those who believed, all those who have believed, لَا تَأْكُلُوا أَمْوَالَكُمْ بَيْنَكُمْ بِالْبَاطِلِ, do not devour one another's wealth unjustly amongst yourselves. إِلَّا أَن تَكُونَ تِجَارَةً عَن تَرَاضٍ, except if it is a valid trade, and such a trade which is conducted by mutual consent. The ayat seems again once very simple, but the jurists, the fuqaha, have taken great lessons, have derived the principles of Islamic trade and business from here. If we look at the two aspects of the ayah, one, Allah Ta'ala says that it must be tijara, it must be trade, and the second, it must be with mutual consent. Islam and the fuqaha have detailed in the books of jurisprudence a vast array of Islam, of different types of Islamic contracts that exist. It is for the Muslim businessman today to understand that, do my contracts fall in to the structure that Sharia has provided? There are a vast array of different types of contracts. A simple example, one of the contracts that Islam has permitted is called Bay'ul Musawama. Musawama means when on one part of the transaction there are goods and on the other side there is money. There's another type of transaction called Murabaha, where a person sells an item at the cost which is disclosed plus the profit. Ijara, the rules of leasing. A simple example, that when a Muslim leases, when a leasing contract takes place, then the risk lies with the person who is leasing. People are confused today that what is the difference between interest and profit. These aspects have been so clearly detailed in the books of fiqh that it is absolutely vital for those engaged in business. In fact, those aspects of a Muslim's life which deal directly with what he is engaged in and occupied in, it is farz-e-ayn, it is necessary, absolutely necessary, that we educate ourselves on those aspects. We have in our, if we take the basic rules of trade, Islam teaches us that for a trade, a transaction to take place, there must be ijab and qubul. There must be an offer and an acceptance. The parties must be sane, mature. Are we aware of these conditions? There are laws that pertain to what we sell. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam forbidden a person from selling what he does not own. In the same manner, a person, even if he has concluded a transaction, but if a person, the risk of an article has not passed on to a person, if a person has not taken possession of an article, he is not permitted to sell. Many of our Muslim businesses have conditions on their invoices and their contracts. Conditions like, for example, that the goods, the ownership of the goods will not transfer until and unless payment is made. Such a condition is invalid according to Sharia. According to Sharia, a valid transaction is completed just with ijab, with offer and acceptance. So respected elders and brothers, the purpose of a platform like this is not to go into the details, but just to give us an awareness and to show us the importance of being able to understand our deen and to understand the great flexibility that Allah Ta'ala has given us in trade. There are all sorts of other transactions which Sharia has permitted. In the time of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, a contract like Salam, where the money is advanced prior to delivery, manufacturing contracts, it is upon the person who is involved in these things to look up, to read up the books and find out whether we are conforming to the Sharia guidelines in our trade. One of the benefits of following the Islamic, the principles that have been laid down by Sharia with regards to our economic system is the great benefits that we will see in the society. We know today that the capitalist system has resulted in the flow of money to be only in the upward direction. The rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And as Muslim businessmen, as Muslims, we are also part of this system. We have become part of that capitalist system until and unless we don't realize the laws that Islam has provided us to save us from these kinds of predicaments. Let us take the simple example of the prohibition of riba. It holds such great implications for the society. If we analyze a businessman who wants to invest and open up a business, we will see the unjustness in the riba system, in the interest system. He may put in, let us say for example, he puts in 100,000 rands from his own pocket and he borrows 900,000 rands on interest. At the end of a year or so, if he makes 500,000 rands profit, only a small percentage of that profit is paid off to the bank as the interest, or what the businessmen call today their financial costs. So if we analyze this, we will see that 900,000 rand of the people's money which worked to earn those profits only receives a mere 150 or 100,000, a small percentage of the entire profits. And the intriguing part is not that, dear brothers. It goes further than that. It goes further to the extent that the businessman does not just stop there. He costs that financial cost into the final product. For the final effect, the negative effect, to reach the consumer on the ground. From this we can understand the far-reaching effects of interest transactions on the community and the great harm it carries in it for the society. In fact, it is not only as a Muslim, not only the Muslims should have realized this, even the non-Muslims. I have with me here a quote from the US president of the 19th century, Thomas Jefferson. He tells his people that, and I sincerely believe with you that banking establishments are more dangerous than standing armies. Look at this, dear brothers. They have agreed, they have been bold enough to accept that this system is not a true system, it is not an equitable system. That is why Islam has taught us, has given us the principles of trade, and these principles will enable a Muslim to achieve, will enable the Muslim Ummah to achieve equality in the society. In fact, I have with me a letter. Time is expiring, but just to give us an idea of the far-reaching effects and the benefits of following the Ahkam of Sharia, this is a letter that appeared in the Al-Balagh magazine from a businessman in India. He describes how he came out of interest and the effects that it has. He says that often it looked very dangerous, fearful, and it appeared as if my unit would become a non-performing enterprise. It also appeared I will not be in a position to pay even the interest component or service the debts in the long run. He goes on giving the details, and he says that one auspicious day, I decided to put thoughts and words into action and decided to create an interestless manufacturing unit. He goes on to say that he had disposed of all unnecessary items, frozen the accounts at the banks, and resolved to do away with interest. In the last line he says, we had completely kicked off all elements of riba from our transactions of interest. And the result, respected elders and brothers, is that after doing away with bank borrowing, there has been 4 to 5-fold growth in the turnover of the business. This is just a simple example of the benefits of following one command that Allah Ta'ala has given us in the Quran, and that is to abstain from riba, to be totally at a distance from riba transactions. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had said that a time will come, سَيَأْتِي عَلَى النَّاسِ زَمَانٌ لَا يَبْقَى إِلَّا آكِلُ الرِّبَى. A time will come that every person will be affected, every person will be involved some way or the other in a riba transaction, either directly or indirectly. he goes on to say that if he is not involved in it directly, then the smoke of that riba will reach him. It is upon us, as people who have influence, as people who can make a difference, to go out and learn what Islam has taught us as far as our socio-economic lives are concerned. With regard to this, I can recommend a book written by Mufti Taqi Usmani, Damat Barakatum. The book is titled An Introduction to Islamic Finance. This book will help the Muslim businessman to understand the true nature of Islamic business and trade, and also to come out from the evils of this, of the prevalent capitalist system. May Allah Ta'ala give us tawfiq wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.